There's a war going on outside with no place to hide. How the hell we let this shit all slide? The world is burning, my people yelling, my niggas ever hardly earning. We got storytelling, that storytelling for black voices, black choices, black creators, black activists on my paper. Usually I'll be at breweries acting foolishly. Now truthfully, I see how crucially we need community. Now who is he? Black excellence sends a seed in the soil. Keep it deep on top like coconut oil. Making haters blood boil. I put together a dream team with big schemes. Screaming till they hear our scream. They'd rather see us iron doom than writing in that writer's room. Bumping MF Doom. It's cool, I'm just eyeing this new section. Attention, this the Black Creator Connection.
Welcome back to the Black Creator Connection podcast, a show for Black creatives and Black creative advocates. If you're new to this show, my name is Lauren Clark. I'm your host, and I'm also a writer, speaker, comedian, activist, and I'm a creative resilience coach, which means I work with creatives and aspiring creatives, and I empower them to lead consistently creative lives that start from a place of peace and joy. I know that you can break your bones, pour the blood, sweat, and tears into your art, and honestly create good art, but that just ain't it for me anymore. And I'm so happy to have found another option, which is taking care of yourself, you know, taking care of yourself first, prioritizing peace, and creating a community that holds you accountable to that. And, you know, it's a whole thing. I've got a whole process. If you're interested, check out my website, laurenclarkisrad.com. RAD stands for Resilient, Aware, and Daring You to Try. I love coaching. I love creating. And I really love this show. So let's get it started. Welcome, or, you know, thanks for coming back if you are. You all are really in for a treat today, okay? In today's episode, I feel like I was a little bit starstruck, honestly. I'm chatting with Spotify star Rahman Mama. And yeah, he's multi-talented, wears a lot of hats, as do many of the people who I've spoken to so far this season. I'm sensing a theme. But yeah, Rahman is a writer, comedian, musician, and during the day, he works in advertising in a music studio in Brooklyn, New York. And we had the pleasure, we talk about it a little bit in the interview, but we had the pleasure of connecting at the height of the pandemic, over an app called Lunch Club, and you'll hear more about how I feel about that. But I will say my conversation with Rahman was spectacular. It was so wonderful. We've only actually spoken to each other two times, including this interview, but no joke, every encounter that I have had with this gentleman, I have walked away feeling more hopeful, inspired, creative, and I'm just lifted by this man, you know, his soul, like he wears it on his sleeve, and he's just wonderful. So I'm so excited for you all to get acquainted with him and learn from him. He, I think, dabbles in mentoring, but you'll see that come out quite a bit in this discussion of ours. But yeah, I really love just his observations on people. They blow me away several times in this conversation. You will see for yourself. Like, there are moments where I'm literally left speechless because the things that come out of his face are so profound, I can't even take it. So, having said that, I will no longer dilly, nor will I dally. Let's get into it. Here is my incredibly inspiring conversation with the multi-talented and spectacular Rahman Mama.
Hey Yeah, to be honest, my favorite time, like I'm a morning person, definitely can wake up and get a lot of stuff done in the morning. But I also really like that late evening, like 11-ish, when nobody's really texting or stuff like that. That's a good time for me to make music.
Nice. Well, there it is. Let's get into it. So how do you identify as a creator? Tell the folks about yourself.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've been blessed to have a lot of different kind of forms of creative expression. So writing, music, stand-up comedy, and then just general kind of like production of events. I'm an A&R at a music studio. And so that's how I identify. And a lot of the time I'll transmute between those different forms.
What is A&R?
It's artists and repertoire. So I work with artists and labels to produce shows.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Super official.
Yeah, it's been fun. I wrote the job title myself because it's a super small studio in Bushwick. It's called First Live. Nice. And it's been a lot of fun. Very small team. I really enjoyed that.
That's awesome. Yeah, okay, so there's no way that those of you who are listening could know this, but the way that Ramon and I first connected was through a little app. I guess it's an app. I don't know. It's called Lunch Club. And I'm just going to say it. I did not connect with many Black people on that app. It's a great networking. No, yeah. I felt like it was a great, I say was, I literally just had a meeting. I'm still using it, but not as much as Clubhouse.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's cool. I'm meeting people. I'm meeting a lot of white men. And you were the first Black person that I talked to. And I was like, yes, this is awesome.
I did not know that. So really? I feel very cool knowing that.
Yeah. You should. Cause like literally I remember our conversation and I was like you literally made my whole day. And because I think the vibe that I'm getting from that app is like, these are people who are really doing the damn thing. Like they're motivated people, they're entrepreneurs, they're really ambitious. Lunch Club, everybody, sign up. It's great. I think they could use more color, but it's great. So yeah, I remember talking to you and connecting with you. And I like that you were like, you're an entrepreneur, but you're also a comedian and you're also a musician and you're also so nice. Like you're such a sweetheart. And I like truly, that was a great day because we talked in the morning and then I was just like, wow, Ramon, wow.
I'm honored. It's cool. I got a little lazy and I actually haven't used Lunch Club for quite some time, but it was a really cool idea. And I think you're one of the only conversations that I had via that platform. So it's kind of inspiring me to go back and see who else I can meet because this has been a really cool.
Yeah, you're not going to meet more like me, but.
Yeah, I don't think I will, but it's been cool because I think it's really interesting to see how these different communities of creatives are really starting to pop up. And I do agree it's important to make sure that we're leveraging this for communities of color. So I'm excited to have this conversation.
Yeah. Oh my God. You're so great. Have you done anything on Clubhouse or are you just like focused on music?
So yeah, I've had a few conversations on Clubhouse. I did one that was focused on advertising because that's what I do during the day. I'm a strategist at an ad agency.
Yep.
And then I had another conversation with the team of individuals who I was in a coaching class with. And that was really cool because it was just nice to be in a group where we're talking about our different creative projects and how we've all grown over the last year. I think you'd actually be really interested in that group of people. So I'll make sure I make an email introduction after this. But other than that, I haven't used much Clubhouse, to be honest.
Yeah. I feel like when they let Android, those weirdos start using it, I was like, I'm taking a break. But yeah. I did like a master class on how to leverage your area of expertise on Clubhouse. And it was very informative. It kind of like walked you through all the features and like how to use rooms and things like that. And just like host your own things. And now I'm kind of like re-inspired to start doing more hosting on there. Especially because I do feel like I do meet more Black creatives on that platform. So I'm always interested to know, like, how are people connecting with one another, especially as the world is opening up, but it still kind of feels like it's happening slowly. But I don't know if you feel this. Yeah. I still feel kind of pressure to like speed things up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of re-entering public spaces specifically?
Yeah. In terms of networking and creating and continuing to put myself out there, I feel like during the pandemic, there was more forgiveness around like, if you aren't constantly go, 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 it's okay. And now the unconditional love is just gone. Like people are like, you had a deadline. You know what I mean? Like, where is it? You know, what do you, but also I will say half of that stuff is also in my mind, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because I feel like during the pandemic, it was the first time that I've experiences almost all of humanity being like, all right, we need to take a break and reflect and see, you know, how people are doing on a very holistic level, specifically in Western culture, right? Because in New York, especially, everyone was always go, 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 go. But during that, really like a 16, 18 month period, everyone just kind of said, all right, pandemic, people are burnt out. So now's a chance to just like take it easy and completely relax. But as we start to get out of that, that mentality has definitely gone away. And I think people feel this pressure to say like, okay, we're reopening. You know, the economy is doing really well. So how can we make sure that we're all constantly creating and constantly, it's a bit of a return to that toxic capitalistic mindset.
Oh my God. So well said. Yeah. I think it's like a new kind of panic. Like there was a pandemic panic, lots of peas. And now there's like, it's evolving into something else. And I think the work that I'm trying to do as a creator myself is just keep the energy of like protecting myself, you know, as fiercely as I was about not getting COVID. Like, let me do that same thing as far as protecting my peace and the things that I'm working on.
Yeah, it's fascinating to think about because, you know, I think everybody was trying to take care of themselves and make sure that they weren't exposed to COVID. And at that same time, it forced people to say, okay, how am I doing in terms of my community? Or how am I doing in terms of my relationships to others and my relationship to myself? And yeah, it's just people became a lot more deliberate because even imagine like the interactions that you had during COVID became so much more. You had to reach out to that person and actually spend time to have those conversations. And I hope that that's something that doesn't go away. We all became so much more mindful. But it's, you know, the world, especially in New York, the world is just like opening back up and people are getting back to it. So it's weird to see.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of grateful that I'm not there right now because I think being outside of it has allowed me space to understand that I was part of that, like, for lack of a better way of saying it, rat race, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm in the South. They walk so slow here. And yeah. It was really annoying to me at first, just like, come on, I just need to get in this Trader Joe's in and out, but maybe it's better that I like take my time and actually like pick out vegetables and stuff. I don't know. The lifestyle down here has been really helpful for me, but I am grateful that things are opening up and it's like, it's interesting to hear from people like you about like how it's happening, like everybody's process. You strike me as somebody who really doubles down on self-care. Like, what if you don't mind, could you offer some self-care tips? Like, what are things that you do, things that you feel particularly, because this is, I can't speak on what Black men need, so yeah, like what helps you?
It's interesting because I think that there are a lot of different ways to approach that. But I think one thing that people don't necessarily ever do is take the time to say, you know, how am I doing? What's working for me? What isn't working for me? And how can I improve on those things? One thing that I've done since I've been in New York is I just have like this, it's almost like a group of individuals who, a team of individuals who I just meet with, and we're constantly seeking to improve ourselves. So we'll meet every Tuesday and just talk about what's going on in our lives and, you know, projects that we're working on for 2 hours, and just really see how we can support each other. And that's been really good. I think one really pivotal piece of self-care is surrounding yourself with people who promote self-care in you. I think one of the scary things about this city and just about life in general is that I believe that you're the average of the five people that you spend the most time with, right? Oh, yeah. And so back in the day before COVID, we're all in the office and we didn't really have a choice around about who we spent most of our time with. And so you could be around people who didn't prioritize self-care and were always, you know, go, 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 unrealistic expectations in terms of how work should be done. But now that we have this opportunity to kind of create space and be more deliberate about the environments around us, the people that we choose to surround ourselves with are super important. So that's one big tip, is just making sure that you surround yourself with people who are prioritizing your self-care. Like even, you know, my personal relationships, my girlfriend is somebody who really helps me, you know, focus on being the best version of myself. I think that pro tip for like a lot of people in the community of color is like, don't be afraid to like get a therapist. You know, like making sure that I'm staying physically active. I think in this day and age, it's so easy to become overstimulated with phones and everything. So I frequently just go on long bike rides, where I'm just like allowing myself to kind of get lost in the city. A lot of music, reading, all those things. But like, you know, I think people are like flowers and we just need like sunshine and we need water and we need healthy environments to grow.
Oh my God, that is so beautiful. I love, yeah, that I love that you said like moving your body, you know, that is a big part of self-care. And the people who you surround yourself with, absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much. That's really important. Okay, let's take it back a little bit. You are from, remind me where you're from again.
So I grew up in Connecticut, but I identify as Beninese American. Right. So my parents are immigrants from Benin. They came here in the early 80s. And so my family and I are first generation.
First generation, wow, wow, wow. And Connecticut?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Interesting, because my parents first started off in Michigan, right? My dad went to University of Michigan, and then they moved to Connecticut because my dad is a teacher. And Connecticut is not the most diverse place, but the part that we grew up in, there just weren't many people of color. And so my brother and I were the only people of color in our grade for most of the time we were in school, right?
Mm.
My sisters had a similar experience. And so it was just a lot of constantly assessing my, you know, the context of myself to others and how my lived experience differed from individuals. Because I think I was in eighth grade when Trayvon Martin was killed. And that was when it became very real for me. And then Eric Garner after that. And then like when I was in college, like Philando Castile, but It was really fascinating to kind of experience those things and then realize that I lived in a super duper white affluent community, even though I wasn't like white or affluent. So that gives a little bit of context as to what that experience was like.
Wow. Yeah. And as a child, like, do you think you were significantly different than the way that you are now? What was your energy like?
Yeah, I mean, I was like super creative. I remember watching this, I think it was a Tim Allen movie, The Santa Claus.
Yes.
And then classic. I just like, yeah. And I remember going to the theater and seeing that. And then he had like his factory where he was like building stuff. And I was just always amazed. I just really loved the idea of having ideas. And I remember leaving the theater and being like, I have an idea. And just like wanting to write down like all these ideas in my brain, but like it's exploding. I say that to say, I think I'm still the same because I still really value ideas. I still value expression. I remember when I was young, I used to like write songs in my head before I knew how to like produce music or like even play keyboard. And just like, I really value just the melodies and stuff like that, writing. So yeah, I'd say I'm still pretty much the same. I wanted to be an FBI agent when I was younger,
oh,
though.
Oh man, that's awesome.
And then I wanted to be a priest for some reason.
Wow.
And now, I mean, I'm neither of those things. So in that sense, I'm not the same, but.
That is, yeah, those are two very different occupations, but yeah. I think I understand because I feel like you also strike me as somebody who really, you're a giver, you know, you want to deliver value. And so that makes a lot of sense that Kid Ramon is like, I want to save the world. And then I want to inspire them.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. Cool. So you were always really creative and just, it sounds like really overjoyed when you would get an idea, which is, I think that is definitely something that I relate to. I would love to know, have you ever like gotten an idea and then immediately thought, oh, this is a bad idea? Like, how do you deal with that? How do you push past and then make your thing?
I think that sounds a lot like my experience with stand-up comedy, where I'd like have, it's a lot of that. It's a lot of, you know, a lot of like iterating and saying, okay, I have this idea. I'm experiencing this. I'm curious about trying it. Maybe it's not going to work. And I'm like needing to try it. And then option A is it goes super well and, you know, it works. And then option B is it fails and you have to figure out how to make it work. And most of the time it's going to be option B, but then you get to option A by going through option B several times. And so I think it's important just to have courage and really, really try things and make sure that you're pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. And even this is something that I've even experienced with music, right? Because with music, when I'm trying a new style of production, if I allow myself to just continue to try things that I know have worked, even though there's something that I want to try and I know it could be challenging, might not be the greatest idea, that's how you grow.
Wow. Yeah, that is how you grow. Good point. I'm sorry. I feel like you're just saying the most profound things. And I feel like I had a question and I'm like, wait a minute. I need to sit with that for a minute, maybe 5 minutes, but we don't have that kind of time. that is so remarkable. It is about courage, isn't it? Wow. Yeah. So, okay. How do you, yeah, it feels like you wear so many hats. Was there a plan or did all these things just kind of happen and it just unfolded? Like, did you go to college or something? And then you were like, I'm going to do this, this, and this. Like, what, how did that work?
Yes. So that's always a fun story to tell. So like writing, I'd always done writing. I was writing for my school newspaper in high school. Loved it. Had a chance to do some really cool pieces. That's something I've been doing forever. I still do that. Music, I played trumpet for 8 years. I don't play anymore. And I played piano since I was young. So yeah. That's always been a thing that I did. In terms of comedy, I actually didn't start doing comedy until I was a sophomore in college, right? I was studying in Shanghai, China. And it was interesting because in China, there's a very tight-knit community of expats, and these expatriates spend a lot of time in the comedy club. So one of my friends invited me to try it, and I loved it and just took to it. And all the while, I was writing at this Chinese website/magazine, but I hadn't produced any of my own music at that point. And so after a couple months of doing a lot of comedy in the Shanghai scene and coming back to America and like just burning out and not wanting to do comedy, that's when I released my first music project because I just needed something to really allow me to use that creative energy that I had. So that's how that interplay started happening, where I was like balancing comedy and music all while like being in school and maybe not focusing on like academics as much as I could have, but still graduated. And it's been interesting trying to balance music and comedy and like you mentioned, wear those hats. And right now I'm definitely at a point where I'm focusing more on music. And I think it's probably going to be like that for quite some time because every single form comes with its own challenges, right? Like with music, music allows you, specifically as a producer, like I don't rap anymore. I used to rap quite a bit and sing a lot, but as a producer where I'm just making lo-fi beats and things that people will kind of relax to, I have this healthy distance from having to be constantly in the forefront. Whereas with comedy, you have to be there. It's very vulnerable, right? Comedy only works if you're on stage and you're performing and you're giving yourself to the audience very actively.
I mean, I have a lot of stuffed animals that would say otherwise. Like, I don't think you need an audience. However, no, I'm just playing, man. I know what you mean. I love that point about every medium has its own challenges. But it seems like you seem to really follow your intuition and kind of like pick your pain, I suppose.
Yeah, I'd say so. Important.
Yeah, that's because it's always going to be a challenge. You know what I mean? I feel like I ramped up my coaching since the last time we spoke. So I have a few clients now, and something that I hear often is like, I just want to follow my passion. I just want to do it full time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, but I want you to know that like your passion is not going to equal 24/7 happiness, you know, like, but if you can take, what is he saying? Fences. If you can take the crickets with the straights, I love that line. You can kind of, it like makes your suffering with all of it less.
Yeah.
And that leaves more room for creativity. Right. Also about being in college and not focusing on academics. Is college for academics? Is that what it's for?
I mean, some people would argue that it's not. And I think for me, the way that I learned about the world through college was like not being focused specifically on academics. Like I studied economics at school, but when I was, I had a chance to, it's interesting. Like some people will be like it sucks, yeah. But I like economics. It's fascinating to me.
That's cool.
And so I had a chance to study in quite a few different places. I was in DC for some time, and then I was in China, and then I was in London, and then I was in Amsterdam. And like all of those places, if I had just been like, all right, let me be in my book and learn only about Keynesian economics or Keynesian economics, however you pronounce it, then I wouldn't have ever had a chance to interact with the people that I met and learn all of these things hands-on. And I do think that there is a balance to meet. And I think that at times I did well with that balance. At times it was difficult, but I think anybody in school would say that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I struggled with college, or at least post grad, I struggled with like, wow, what did I even do? But it feels like there's still things, you know, I graduated over a decade ago, not over, like, come on. But I feel like some of what was really happening, like some of the real lessons, like those are things that I didn't really sign up to take those classes, you know?
Yeah.
And in a way it was kind of more of an incubator. It gave me time to really like figure out like, what do I want to do? But I thought I was going there for something different, and then I got something else, you know?
What did you study?
I started out pre-law. Idiot.
Wow.
And then I quickly changed. And I think wanted to get into journalism because I also wrote for my school newspaper as well.
Nice.
And yeah, I enjoyed it. But then I started to realize like, I don't want to write about other people. I want to write about myself. Mm-hmm. So I started to go more into like creative writing. And I took a memoir writing class my senior year, which those stories I can't even stomach anymore, but I had a great time. I had a wonderful time in that class, mostly because I was 23 years old in a memoir writing class. I hadn't fucking done anything. So yeah, sometimes I go back and I read that stuff and I'm just like, wow, like you were troubled by like, oh, your mom said something weird to you during fall break. Oh, you know, poor baby. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, college, it's just forever something that I'll keep learning from, but not for the reasons that I thought.
It's It's interesting because what you mentioned about the memoir writing class, I think that that also applies to comedy, where when I first started doing comedy, all of my stuff that I would talk about was like very observational. I'd talk about what it was like having African parents. I'd tell jokes that about like politics. I'd tell jokes about just society, but I wasn't at a point, and I still don't know if I'm completely at this point where I could be reflective and talk about myself, just because I hadn't lived a ton.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that that's the one thing that people will tell you whenever you're doing writing or whenever you're doing comedy, you have to have this lived experience, which you can draw from. I think that's why you look at comedians like Dave Chappelle, and Chris Rock, and Richard Pryor, all of those great comedians, and their comedy really centers on their lived experience, which, yes. You know, I'm like still quite young, so I haven't gone through a lot of crazy stuff that I can write an hour on.
Right.
But it's also interesting because my senior year, I took a writing course that I really loved. It was fiction writing, advanced fiction writing. And I wrote this story. I'd actually be curious to see what you think about it and maybe workshop it with you.
Oh my God, please send it to me. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give you the quick like three liner, but it's essentially a series of letters from Tupac to his mother talking about why he decided to fake his death.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, and so I worked on it.
That. Yeah,
and it's cool because it's like this idea that like Tupac just felt like fame was becoming suffocating, right? And so he talks about like how he just was becoming paranoid. He was at one point in the studio when he was shot at, and he didn't know who kind of set him up and pulled the trigger. Being famous, it was impossible for him to have regular conversations and just like we talked about, enjoy the sunshine without people coming up to him and being like, Tupac, like gang violence, things like that. And so it's cool. I think the idea is cool because it's almost like an alternate ending to a real story. And something that's like very important to the Black community, like what happened to Tupac? Because we still don't have a complete answer, right?
Right. I feel like, oh man, that just makes me think of how creativity can be so healing, you know? Like, oh my gosh. Yeah, send me that. You also have a medium where you have a lot of, you write about like comedy and you've had some really, like a few of them have gone viral, right?
Yeah, a few of them have gone viral. The first one I had that went viral was talking about why Dave Chappelle stopped doing comedy. So that's actually kind of similar to the Tupac one because it's like, why did Tupac want to run away from fame?
Right.
Because those moments existed for him, but the Dave Chappelle piece. And then the second one that went viral was about what would happen if Drake became an independent artist and decided not to be signed to a record label, which is it's a fascinating idea.
Yes. I think after we connected over Lunch Club, I read them. It's been some time, but I remember reading them and being like, I mean, very, very exemplary of who you are, like so profound, but also hilarious.
Thank you.
And yeah. I think sometimes, yeah, that's like my favorite kind of comedy, which is like, oh, can I learn from what you're saying? Like, please don't just get up there and talk about, you know, I specifically hate when comedians talk about like a woman's body. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I specifically hate that. But
yeah.
You actually, yeah, you're very wise, my friend.
Thank you.
So yeah, those of you listening, go check out his Medium page right now. It's great. I'm skipping all over the place, I know, but we were talking about college and I am curious because this is another question that I get a lot. People wondering, obviously people in high school wondering if they even should go to college. What would you say to, you know, somebody, a creative who is debating that right now in these individual times?
I would say, I personally don't think that college is like 1,000% necessary. I think that it'll help you if you go about it in the correct way. But I think what's more important than we're starting to see this is that skills are really important.
Mm.
And especially as a creative, right? I think that if you're somebody who does video editing, then it doesn't matter if you have a BA. It matters if you know how to cut a scene and do a transition that people are going to find appealing. And if you can do that, then people are going to want to work with you. I also think that we're at a point where we're just starting to see the whole structure really start to change. I think the pandemic did really highlighted a lot of that for us. People are realizing, okay, maybe going into student debt is not the way to go, especially as the economy starts to restructure. At the same time, there are these different opportunities, certification programs. Google came out with career certificates, which can teach you how to become project manager, UX designer, technical support analyst. And you don't need to go to college in order to learn those things. So I think that people are really starting to understand that there is room to explore our passions. And it's interesting kind of going back to what you mentioned in terms of people saying that they want to do what they love. I think that there's more room for that. And the equation that I've always kind of gone by, and one of my mentors illustrated this pretty well, it's working creatively as a combination of what the world needs, what you're good at, and what you like, right? So you could be like a really good video editor, but you could despise video editing, right? Mm-hmm. And then the world still has a need for video editors. But if that's not the intersection of all those three areas, then it's not going to be something that you thrive in. So I think that, again, we're just at a point with all this technology, you know, meet people on Clubhouse, meet people on Lunch Club, meet people on Instagram, interact and then launch a business. People are just empowered to be able to skip college.
Perfect answer. If we were recording this like in a studio and you were sitting across from me, I would slap you because that is so good. Oh my God. That is so good.
Well, I'll accept it.
Yeah. It's a good slap. It's a black mother. I love you so much. Yeah.
color purple. You seen Color Purple?
Yeah, it's exactly that.
It took me a long time to understand that slap, but I understand it better now. Because it was like the two souls were talking in that one.
Yeah, that was beautiful. I feel like you're just saying so many things that are personally incredibly affirming to me, and I'm just also really excited for people to hear what you have to say, because yeah, it really is about skill. And are you yourself like, are you a mentor to people? Like, you talk about the coaches and the, you know, people who've impacted you. Mm-hmm. How do you see yourself making an impact towards others, or is that something you think about?
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting because working in the advertising field and just industry, a lot of people have come to me and sought out that type of guidance, which has been affirming, because I've been very fortunate to be able to straddle that line as working as, you know, like established in a corporate environment, but also being very creative. And those two things play on each other, because in terms of working on my own creative projects, I have an understanding of just making sure that the business side is airtight. Which can still be challenging at times, but then being in the corporate environment, bringing this creativity and really just trying to bring a level of soul that might not otherwise exist. But yeah, a lot of students who are, you know, trying to come into advertising will put time on my calendar at work and say, hey, can you just, you know, give me some advice? And at work, I've started to give this talk on a yearly basis called The Art of Jumping Backwards, where I talk about my experience as a high jumper when I was in high school. And I don't know if you know the history of high jump, but essentially the sport was done completely differently. These days, people jump backwards. So they run and then they take over backwards. Mm-hmm. But in the past, they used to jump forwards. And so it was one individual who in 1968 decided that he wanted to change his approach. And as a result of that, he started setting new world records. Mm-hmm. But jumping backwards is this psychological phenomenon which we witness in businesses as well. So for example, there's a business model that people say that's never going to work. Why would you try it? And then it becomes the most successful one. So for example, Netflix. People didn't believe that Netflix was going to work in the beginning because computers were slow. Not everybody had a computer. Entertainment was physical. So you would go and you stop at Blockbuster, pick up a VHS. But now Netflix is one of the most valuable companies in the world. Same thing with Uber, right? People say, why would I order from my phone when I can just get a cab in the street and it's more seamless and I know who I'm interacting with? But now Uber has put taxis out of business, at least in the cities, Airbnbs. And so then bring it to a personal level, like people jump backwards every day. So like leaving your job and chasing your passion and just that type of thing. So I try to mentor individuals through that lens.
Amazing. I don't even know what to do with myself anymore. That's incredible. Okay. So, Jesus, hold on. Hold on. Everybody just relax, okay? Because we are in the midst of greatness and I just need to take all of that in. Jumping backwards. Wow. Okay. I feel like you're freaking perfect, but have you ever made mistakes?
Yeah. Yeah, we've all made mistakes.
Yeah. Sure. You know. No, I'm sorry. Do you have any advice that if you could like reach back in time, speak to your younger self, like what would you offer to a younger version of you?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think right now is just I think there's this piece of paper that I keep on my door and it says, honor the opportunity that you've been given. And so I would just remind myself of that every day, because I think that it's easy to lose sight of the fact that every day is really a blessing, right? Yeah. And like, if you look at just the general like hierarchy of needs of humans, a lot of us are very fortunate that we're not in survival mode, where every day we're not trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to eat? Where am I going to sleep? Where am I going to live? So we're at this point where we are seeking self-actualization, which is a bit rare in the course of human history. So many people just seeking that. And I think that that's why so many of us can feel deeply unhappy at periods of time, because we feel like we have all this stuff, you know, but why don't we feel fulfilled? So I think that just reminding myself every day to honor the opportunity that I've been given and realize that all of this is a blessing.
Yep. I would also say that exactly the way you said it. That's cool. Wow. Ramon, you're amazing. And I'm so happy that you could do this show. I feel like you dropped so many gems, helpful to me. And, you know, I've got a lot of stuff figured out. No, I'm just kidding. But I just know that this is going to be a really impactful episode, and it's going to be really fun for people to hear. Awesome. Wrapping things up a little bit, I'm curious to know, are there ways that we can support you? How can we lift you up, follow you, celebrate you? Let us know.
Yeah, I mean, if you like music, definitely stream my stuff on Spotify. You can find it under Ramon Mama, RamanMama. Find me on Instagram and just keep up with some of the projects that I've been putting out, that I will continue to put out. On Instagram, it's Air Ramon, AirRaman. If something that I've written has piqued your interest, or if you can help me figure out how to land the plane on this Tupac piece, then let's do that.
Amazing, man. Yeah, you just keep doing what you're doing. I really, like I said, and I'll say it again, when I first met you, I was so just inspired immediately, and I love the way you think. I love your mind. Thank you again. I'm truly so grateful.
Thank you. And it's been a really great experience talking to you as well. And I value the connection that we've been able to create, and you're great as well. I think you're going to do great things. You already are doing great things, empowering the community. And if there's any way that I can support you in that, please let me know.
I definitely will. Thanks again, man. Right? Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Ramon is the greatest. You get it now. Thank you so much for listening. This has been the Black Creator Connection podcast with Lauren Clark. That is me. What even is me? What does that mean? But anyways, we'll be back next week with a brand spanking new guest who will be, you know, sharing about their life and delivering value to you, hopefully. If you enjoyed this episode or any other episode of this show, please do me a favor and make sure you are following, subscribing, leave a rating and a review in Apple Podcasts. It helps people who are poking around find out why they should listen to this show. So that would be so helpful. Another way you can support the Black Creator Connection is by following all the social channels. We're on Instagram at the Black Creator Connection and Twitter. We're at the BCC3. We will also be sharing more updates. When I say we, I mean me. LOL. I'm the only one doing this right now. But right now, did you hear that? I got plans, y'all. I got plans. And speaking of plans, my latest video on the Patreon page was about said plans. I share in depth what I'm working on, what I'm focused on the next like 6 months and beyond a little bit. And hopefully I offer some guidance for other people who are trying to make plans when the future is uncertain. It always is. Hint. But yeah, you can do it. If you're interested in just a little bit more information, go ahead and become a Patreon subscriber. $3 a month. You'll get more information. You'll get a little bit more content from yours truly. And it would also, you know, it's gonna help this show continue to grow and thrive. And I just feel, yeah, I feel really, really grateful to all of the contributors thus far. It really blows me away that like people really want the work that I'm doing to continue. It blows me away every time I sit and think about it. So thank you so much for supporting if you are or plan to. That's it from me. Take care of yourselves, y'all. Love yourselves, and we'll see you next week. Bye.